Accession number 18560, real one.
Harry Simpson, real one. Where were you born, please?
I was born Leeds.
Which year was this?
4th of May, 1921.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Leeds?
Yes, I did, sir.
Which school did you go to?
St. Peter's.
How old were you when you finished your schooling?
14.
In
1935? 35, I'm sorry.
Did you get a job when you left school?
Oh, yes.
Doing what?
I went to the butchering.
Is that what you were doing when war was declared?
No, I was in the army when I joined the army when war was declared.
As a regular?
As a regular, yes.
When did you join the army?
The 1st of May, 1939.
Why did you decide to join the army then?
Because I... I knew a war was going to come, and I always fancied a Scottish regiment.
Why did you fancy a Scottish regiment?
And my grandfather was a Scot.
Where did he come from?
Oh, I have no idea, sir. He lived in Leeds. I worked for they worked for the Leeds Waterworks.
So how did you go about joining a Scottish regiment then?
Oh, I went down to Leeds and joined at the recruiting office in Leeds. And they warned me that they would accept me. But when I reported to Perth, I would possibly be rejected, being an Englishman. But fortunately, they accepted me, and I was pleased about it.
Where did you do your basic training?
Basic training I did in Queen's Barracks, Perth.
And what was that like?
Oh, very good. Very good.
How were you treated by the people in charge?
Very well. We had a corporal. Pooplo was his name. He was a pipe corporal. He was a very good chap. A wonderful experience. He's an old soldier. He'd been in India and all over the place. And I forget his name now. Tug Wilson. Sergeant Tug Wilson was a senior. Corporal Lowe was a supernumerary.
And then did you go to a battalion of the Black Watch?
Well, unfortunately, we had to move out. The recruits had to move from Perth to allow the militia to move in, whilst we went down to the 1st Battalion in Dover for complete our training. And we were there when war broke out. We were on Linden Spout Ranges on the Sunday morning when it came over the radio. On the Naffy, we were in the Naffy at the time.
How did you feel when you heard the news that Chamberlain had declared war?
Well, strangely enough, we're all recruits. We're in a fine regiment. We were delighted, really, because we then knew where we were. We weren't in an imbalance. And immediately after lunch on the Sunday dinner, transport came from Dover Castle with sandbags, picks and shovels, and they were deployed on the cliff tops, being weapon pits and whatnot, in case of an invasion.
Were you in a particular battalion by now?
No, we were only attached to the 1st Battalion to complete our training. And, September, and we stayed in Dover until the battalion moved to Aldershot to mobilise and go to France.
Was there any question of your going to France?
No, I don't think so, no. We came back to Perth, and the whole unit, recruit trainers, we just about finished recruit training then, in September. We'd been in 6 months. We returned to Perth and billeted in the dye works. We billeted there in the dye works. We had a Sergeant P3, who was a regular, our instructor. We completed the training on the machine guns, on the Bren guns, the anti-tank rifle, bayonet training, and then eventually I, along with another 30, approximately 30 men, we were transferred to the and seconded to the 7th Battalion Black Watch, based in Callander. They hadn't been there long. A battalion which was dispersed over various parts of Scotland. Grangemouth, Rosyth, Kirkcaldy, and Callander. We were there for quite a while doing training, extensive training. We were in the, I believe we were in the 9th Division at that time, but we weren't told exactly which division we were in. But eventually, they reformed the 51st Division from the one that had been captured in St. Valery. And from then on, we stayed in the division right throughout the war. We went to based in Shetland for quite a while under Colonel Robertson. And mostly territorial officers, but they were damn good. One or two regulars from the depot joined us. I don't know whether I have the names in that book or not. I can't remember the names.
Doesn't matter. They'll be in the book anyway. Just go from memory.
In Shetland, we continued the training up there. Colonel Robertson was in charge of, overall commander of the Shetland Defence Force. We're building positions in order to repel it, the enemy if an invasion occurred. We had a various number of stand twos, but nothing transpired of them. And in Shetland we had a damn good training period. very experienced training.
Were there any enemy attacks in the Shetlands?
No. There was an odd plane came over. Just mainly reconnaissance. There was one incident during the search for the Scharnhorst. I think it was the Scharnhorst.
Oh, the Bismarck?
The Bismarck. Search for the Bismarck, that's right. Because the trouble they had up its copper flow. And we used to count the Sopwith planes, torpedo planes, going overhead from Sumbra to find the Bismarck. But we never saw any come back.
So, which years were you in the Shetlands, do you think?
Now then.
The pursuit of the Bismarck was May 1941.
Well, we were up there in 41. We went up to... we sailed to Shetland the back end of, or the beginning of 40. 1940. And stayed there until we came home. And we came back to Scotland in 1941 to... Fockabus. We were stationed in Fockabus.
Where's that?
In Morayshire, or Aberdeenshire. I think it's Morayshire, Fockabus. The division was... We were formed in the 51st Division proper. We mobilised in the 51st Division. The 1st Battalion... The 1st Battalion and the Sub-Tank guys were all in the same brigade with the 7th Battalion. From there we carried on training. Training was progressively severe. And we were working up to the point when we would be in action, which was not very far off. From them, but of course we didn't know it. Then in 1942, I believe. You see, it's in the book that we moved down to Ash.
In Surrey?
No, Ash in, is it Surrey? I can't remember.
Near Aldershot?
Near Aldershot.
Yes, it's in Surrey.
Surrey, I'm sorry. And we stayed there. We collected our overseas equipment and were fully mobilised for action. And eventually, the convoy from Glasgow, which was, I think at that time, it was the biggest convoy that ever went abroad. We had quite a good time on the ships, travelling down the Irish Sea, down there, and the Bristol Channel, and eventually on our way, I do believe that we went across using the convoy routes, the guarded routes by the British Navy, to sail off the American coast, down the American coast, and not know how far we were off the American coast, until we came in line on the equator and then moved over to the African coast, the west coast of Africa. We stayed in Freetown, but we didn't disembark. We just stayed on the ships for refueling supplies and whatnot. And then we set sail for South Africa. Half of the convoy stayed in Cape Town. The other half, of which we were part, landed in Durban. In Durban, we were based on the Durban race course. And Colonel Oliver, our colonel at that time, who took over before we left, Aldershot, he took command of the battalion. And he organized route marches. Again, we're to acclimatize ourselves to land again as opposed to being on ship. And running around the race course, the outer course of the rain course, the race course, he organized that. And one long route march that we did, which was very enjoyable, everyone enjoyed it, was through the Valley of a Thousand Hills in the Zulu quarter of South Africa. And on the way back, we marched through on the coast on the outer coast, outer part of Durban, but it was on the coast road. And the pipe band, which was leading us, started up. And we got a hell of a laugh. And I think there were monkeys anyway, what they called them?
Oh, that's sort of apes, you mean? Small apes?
There's a name for them. I've forgotten them.
It'll come back to you later, don't worry.
And they started pelting the pipe band with the coconuts. But it was quite an enjoyable march, was that? It was the culmination of the march. And then a recruiting parade for the South African forces in Durban. And then, of course, we went back to the race course. And eventually embarked for a destination we didn't know where we were going then even. In the Indian Ocean. And we set sail. And then we saw part of the convoy leave us. And they went out eastwards. We carried on north. And eventually finished up in Egypt. We landed at Port Tewfik. And from Port Tewfik, we went up to Kassassin. And various roundabout. The 8th Army headquarters were there. It was a training depot as well. Well, it was a base. It was a base, actually. And we did further training, desert training, desert movers. We did route marches over the desert for quite a while.
What was your rank and job with the battalion by now?
Oh, I was promoted our sergeant, the carrier platoon sergeant. I had been since 1941 in Shetland and Scotland. And then, of course, we were there doing training. And we actually in the line when Rommel attacked. That was before Alamein proper, the main battle of Alamein.
Whereabouts were you in the line?
Well, we were in the line at a time in the M box, I think they called it the M box.
Letter N?
M.
M.
They had boxes then, which were closed defence units in that in the box. They're all linked up. They called it the box, I believe, because if the enemy attacked it, we were all firmly enclosed inside it, you see, for defence. It didn't attack us there, but we were under shell fire, heavy shell fire at times. I remember Chick Ewan, he was one of my carrier drivers, and Curly Stewart. We decided that we'd find out if a bullet would pierce the armour of a carrier's. So we sat in a slit trench and fired two or three rounds on the side of a carrier just to see if the bullets would go through.
What happened?
Oh, they were all right. It was good protection. But anything bigger, the anti-tank rifle, of course, would have gone through. We hadn't tried that. No, I wouldn't try that. Well, then...
How many casualties did your unit take when Rommel attacked the M-box?
We weren't attacked in that M-box. We were only getting used to the fire, the baptism of fire, mainly to get used to the shell fire and whatnot. And of course the odd bullet to flow over.
This sounds as though it's about September or October 1942.
It would be September. Yes, September. It'd be September.
What did you think of conditions in the desert?
Well, it was pretty drastic. But we did fairly well. The food was good. At times it was mainly McConaughey's, and we said when they got the tins we thought they'd been left over from the First World War. Of course we didn't have soya beans then at that time, it was really, the rations were very, very sparse, and tea.
Did you have a water ration?
Oh yes, a water ration, one water bottle a day, and of course we used to pull our water, just a drop each, into a bowl at night. Each man poured a drop in from his water bottle, and the next morning when we had a wash, we didn't use the hands, we had a towel, a face cloth, to put it in the water, a bit of soap, wipe your face and whatnot, and that was your wash. We got no baths or anything like that at the time. We did rely on the rains, of course, when they came. And when they came down, it really rained heavy. What we used to do was stand outside in the rain in a shirt with shirt and short KDs and let the rain soak through them. We used to rub the soap on.
On the shirt?
He did one thing. Your clothes with the soap. At the same time, it washed your clothes and it cleaned your body. And then we took off the shirts and the underclothes, laid them on the sand when the sun came out. And then next to no time, the sun, it was that hot, it dried it. Dried your clothes. We, of course, in the meantime, put new ones on from the carrier that we had stored in there in the toolbox. But that was our way of life at that time.
What were the main problems that you had as carrier platoon sergeant?
The main job was support the companies in the battalion on attacking, and extremely, when they were attacked heavily, we were able to be pulled forward and to help them. But it was very, very difficult with a regular carrier. At that time it was open at the top, and you'd got to be very, very wary of being under shell fire. You got to move about with a great distance between each vehicle, because we said that a German mortarman was so bloody good they could drop a bomb in your carrier. And they were good. It's just their protection mainly, the regular carriers were on the flanks of the battalion to give fire support on the flanks. But the attacking in the desert, the main fighting in the desert, was by the tanks and by the infantry. We weren't used very much, the Bengal carriers. We used occasionally, but only on patrols. And then from the Battle of Alamein.
Were you in the Battle of Alamein?
Yes, we were in the Battle of Alamein.
Can you take me through what happened to you personally in the battle?
In the battle, personally, we were left with the carriers weren't used as a fighting role at the night of the attack. Our job was to carry. We apportioned the carriers out accordingly. One to carry small packs, one to carry big packs and greatcoats and blankets for each company. A carrier was designated for each company, A, B or C company. One carrier carried water, the other carried spare ammunition, which we followed on behind the advancing units through the minefields, along the tracks and through the minefields, which we'd got to negotiate by compass. And then when the companies, the infantry companies, and the consolidated their positions, we had to give them, take up the supplies that we carried. And then we were there. If we had nothing to do when we got there, we drew to behind the line, behind the minefield, which was just behind the companies, who were then in position to repulse any counterattacks.
So did you use the Bren guns in the Battle of Alamein?
We didn't use them. No, we didn't use our Bren guns. No, we weren't in close contact with the enemy as a carrier unit. But we were on foot. We were close up to the companies at the time. We only fired the unit, the guns, when the enemy were close on hand. And the odd prisoners coming back, which were mainly Italians, at the start. That was a most horrifying experience, because as we advanced further, we saw our mates laid prostrate on the ground. Some we helped that were still living, giving them a cigarette, a drink of water.